Again, today we have Judge Diaz joining us from the Fourth Circuit, and Judge Ryan will be participating on the record on both the cases today. Before we get started on the cases, we have a motion for admission. Mr. Anderson.
Chief Judge Erdman, I move the admission of Major James Michael Bell from the state of Kentucky. I've examined his credentials on file in the office of the clerk, and I am satisfied that he possesses the qualifications for membership in the bar of this court.
Thank you. Any discussion? Your motion is granted. Will the clerk administer the oath, please? Major Bell, we'd like to welcome you to the court. Thank you for your service. I understand you're currently the rule of law advisor at the JFK Special Warfare Center. And we'd also like to recognize your parents who are in attendance today to watch this admission ceremony. So thank you. The court will now call United States versus Bush. Counsel, are you ready? Appellant.
May it please the court. I am Major Luke Wilson, and together with Colonel Patrick Wells, we represent Airman Bush in this appeal. By utilizing a later enacted law to increase the harshness of the appellant's sentence or the sentencing range, the military judge violated the ex post facto clause of the Constitution. Had the judge done a proper RCM 1003 analysis, it would have been apparent that under the custom of the service, the maximum sentencing range for the appellant in this case for this specific offense would have been 1 year. Now, this analysis turns on two broad areas. Number one, did the judge, in fact, use a later enacted law? And number two, did that later enacted law increase the harshness of the punishment? Turning to the first question, his answer is simply, the appellant's conduct through the care inquiry admitted that the offense in this specific case lasted from April of 2013 to the first week of May of 2013. The President of the United States signed the executive order setting the punishment range for this offense about a week later, on 15 May of 2013. Despite the government's contention in its brief, the judge in fact used that executive order even though it was later enacted. And you can find that on Joint Appendix page 38, where the judge said, given the president's direction that it carry a penalty of a dishonorable discharge, 15 years in total forfeitures, et cetera, et cetera. He says it again, what's your view of executive order? He uses the wrong number. He uses 42012, but it's certainly he's talking about this executive order, where he says, what's your view of the executive order where the president has stated that the maximum punishment under paragraph 45B, article 120B, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He reaffirms it again on joint appendix page 46, where he says the maximum punishment for indecent liberties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I believe tracks with the punishment under the president's executive order.
Well, Counselor, if we stopped that hearing before lunch, you'd have a pretty good argument because all he referenced there was the executive order. But doesn't the record demonstrate that after they came back from lunch that he spent the majority of his time essentially doing an analysis of the elements of the various offenses? And then he added, and this mirrors what the executive order says. Now, that certainly seems to indicate that he did perform the analysis, although I agree that he didn't use the terms that are found in the rule.
And yes, Your Honor, he did do some analysis, but he certainly did not do a 1003 analysis. And as you bring up, he certainly didn't use the terms closely related. I think he used the words analogous, which is more of a RCM 1001 C1BII rather than C1BI analysis. And the words certainly have different meanings. But besides that, there's no doubt that the judge did not have RCM 1003 in his head at all at any time. If you take a look at Joint Appendix page 43, it's the judge's belief, according to what he said on the record, was that, quote, barring the president setting the cap, the maximum punishment would be life without possibility of parole and a DD. Well, what he's saying there is they were in the defense counsel and the judge were in a colloquy back and forth asking about what the maximum punishment was. It came up, well, if the judge hasn't set a maximum punishment for this offense, well then, and the judge says, then the maximum punishment is no range. But as this court has recognized in a number of cases, but it cited supplementally, is that 1001 is a presidential enacted limitation on punishment. So the judge certainly didn't have 1001 in his head, or he never would have said, barring the president setting the cap, the maximum punishment would have been LWOP and a DD.
Well, counsel, this is a case where the statute had been enacted.
Correct.
The manual had not been amended.
Correct.
The material relating to the predecessor statute was still in the manual.
Yes.
And the judge looked to that. This doesn't implicate the ex post facto clause. Can't we, in the first place, constitutional avoidance applies to this court like it applies to every other federal court. Can't we decide this on the basis of whether the judge erred in what he did rather than dragging in the ex post facto clause?
I don't believe so for a couple of reasons, Judge, or at least one specific reason. If you turn to 1003 and it says you have to compare the charged offense to a listed offense, and I think what a lot of people have gotten off track with, we've looked at the word listed rather than looking at the word offense. If you go back, the Congress in 2012 with the National Defense Authorization Act, a year before this offense conduct occurred, repealed both indecent liberties with a child and indecent exposure, which is my argument, but indecent liberties with a child was their argument, obviously. Those might have been listed in the manual at that time, but they weren't offenses at that time because they'd been repealed by Congress. They were just listed in the manual, but they're not offenses listed in the manual, which is what's required by RCM 1003. So based on that,
well, if they'd repeat, isn't it your argument that indecent exposure is the proper?
It is.
Well, if indecent exposure had been repealed, how could it be the proper thing to refer to?
Because it's not under RCM 1003C1BI. I believe that the proper analysis and the proper inquiry should have been in RCM 1001C1BII. Custom of the service is actually what we should have landed on at the end of the day. And that is certainly me taking a bit of a step back from my brief, where I talked about closely related, but I think...
Yeah, it is a bit of a step back.
I believe at the end of the day that is the appropriate analysis.
Well, but that's a regulatory analysis, not a constitutional one, right?
Well, but the regulatory analysis gets us to whether or not the punishment that should have been enacted in the first place would have been harsher or less harsh than the punishment that the judge used at the end of the day.
Well, if the judge screwed up, he screwed up. And I don't see why you have to drag in the Constitution.
Because he screwed up constitutionally, sir.
Well, but if we can decide it on a non-constitutional ground, we ought to do that.
But the main difference between, obviously, as the judge is well aware, the main difference is with just a standard trial error, a non-constitutional trial error, the burden remains on the appellant to prove harm or no material prejudice. With a constitutional error, the burden shifts, as it should, to the government to show harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Going back to that, and that's why it's a constitutional error. I mean, that's not why it's a constitutional error, but that's why it's important that it's a constitutional error, obviously. Going back to it, before you can do a proper 1003 analysis, the first stage is to determine what offense are we talking about? What was he charged with? Now, the government seems to say he was certainly charged with sexual abuse of a child, the 2012 enacted law by Congress. But the government makes the mistake of saying that under that law, he was charged with indecent exposure with the intent to gratify his sexual desires. But that's not the case. Sexual abuse of a child is an umbrella offense that pulled in at least four offenses, previous offenses. Sexual contact, well, two elements for sexual abuse of a child, lewd act plus a minor. But lewd act is defined in four distinct ways. Sexual contact, indecent exposure with the intent to gratify sexual desires, indecent language with the intent to gratify sexual desires, or an indecent act which has no specific intent. In this case, they didn't charge him with indecent exposure with the intent to do anything. They, in fact, charged him with just an indecent act, a lewd act. There was no specific intent within the charge sheet. So looking at it that way, what we have is an indecent act plus a minor. Now when you take that and you compare that to illicit offense, again, I go back to my original argument that because these both indecent liberties with a child, the government's argument, as well as indecent exposure, my initial argument, are no longer, they weren't offenses at the time that he committed the conduct. In 2012, they'd already been repealed by Congress. So if they're not offenses, then that takes us out of C1BI, and that puts us in 1003C1BII.
Okay, now let me make sure I understand it. You're arguing that they're not offenses because even though they were still in the manual, they had been repealed.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is that an argument you made in your brief?
No, it was not. I didn't pick up on that until I was doing my final prep for it, and that's why I
thought I had missed this entirely, but I guess we're all being surprised here.
Certainly.
Is it waived?
No, I don't believe it's waived. The government certainly addressed it within its brief. It's part and parcel to the entire argument. They initially brought up there's a custom of the service. Even if this doesn't apply, then there's custom of the service. And I brought in supplemental cases to show that the custom of the service has always been to charge these types of facts as indecent exposure from the very beginning of the manual. And I supplementally cited a number of cases, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I believe, going from the 1950s all the way up to 2002, were very similar circumstances with underage people, exposing genitalia to underage people, were always charged as indecent exposure, not indecent acts or not indecent liberties with a child.
Do those include offenses that involved a child?
Every single one that I included in my supplemental site did, yes, Your Honor.
And was there an alternative offense that specifically applied to a child when those?
Indecent liberties was still around at that time as well, Your Honor. Those cases range from 3-year-olds to 6-year-olds, 7, 9, and 15-year-olds.
Okay, what is your authority for your new argument that since the offenses had been repealed, they still were offenses listed in the manual? So why are we, is there any authority for us to support your argument?
As much as the RCM 1003 itself, Your Honor, is the only authority that I can point to. In my review of the 60 years with the case law, I can't find any case where the CMA or CAF has taken a look and said this is what listed means. But a common sense reading of 1003 says a listed offense. If it hadn't been enacted by Congress, it never would have been an offense in the first place. If it was repealed by Congress, it's certainly not an offense now, or in 2013 when the offense took place. It's just not there. It was
well,
listed,
it's an offense. It's just not an offense that is currently active.
I don't know if I can even concede that, Your Honor. I would say that if you take something and decriminalize it, it's not an offense anymore, and we can't look at that as being an offense at that point. So, therefore, I mean, it's a common sense argument, but I've never found another case that dealt with this type of issue that I could find.
So where does that leave your client with respect to the maximum punishment for the offense?
If you go down and you take that logical route to say they weren't offenses, indecent liberties with a child, nor indecent exposure in 2013 were offenses, therefore we can't compare a charged offense to those
right.
Listed non-offenses. Then we pop down into RCM 1001B, C1BII, and we come to custom of the service.
So there's no federal offense that's analogous to it?
Judge, I couldn't find one that was directly analogous to these types of charges, nor could I find one that didn't require an intent element on it. I mean, certainly there are exploitation cases, but for the most part, they deal with producing visual depictions, and they deal with, you know, specific intents.
Okay, so what offense do you get to then?
It's indecent exposure again, Your Honor, but it's based under custom of the service. It's just a different analysis to get to the same place. Under a custom of the service, drawing from former Judge Baker's dissent in Beatty, he speaks of, if we're going to talk about custom of the service, then we need to do an actual review of how we've handled these cases for the number of years that we've been handling such cases. And that's when we go back and we look at the supplemental sites. The government cited one case where it was exposing himself to a three-year-old, and they ended up finding that that was indecent liberties with a child, I believe. But what that does kind of improperly is that that wasn't a custom of the service issue. That was a legal and factual sufficiency issue at that stage. And what he had done, when you look at what was charged in that case, because as Beatty also says in a footnote, to determine a maximum punishment, we look at the charges. We don't look at the
cause. Beatty dissent or the Beatty majority opinion?
In the Beatty majority opinion, in a footnote, they actually say we look at the charged offense to determine what the maximum punishment is. We don't take a look at the colloquy. We don't look at, you know, the factual nature behind it all. We look at the charged offense because everybody should have the ability to look at the offense that's charged and determine what range of punishment he's facing, he or she is facing.
In terms of looking at custom of the service, don't we have specific intent issue here? And we're looking at indecent exposure where there is no specific intent.
Correct, Your Honor. And I would go back to what I said earlier. The government in this case didn't charge my client, didn't charge Aaron Bush with a specific intent crime. They charged him with a very general intent crime.
What about the social cost, which this court has used in the past? Isn't there a large gulf between indecent exposure and this offense?
Certainly. There's two points about that. If you're in the custom of the service realm in the first place, the social cost analysis goes out the window because we're only talking about custom of the service at that point. Social cost has nothing to do with it. Now, if you don't agree with my argument that the offenses weren't there because they were already repealed and we're back in RCM 1001C1BI rather than II, that's where that social cost analysis potentially hypothetically might come in. But what that social cost analysis really is, when you take a look at it, as I said before, from my reading of all the cases that I could find, I couldn't find one case where this has been used, where RCM 1003 has been used in a context other than a 133 or 134 context. So it makes sense if you're talking about a 134 context where you have any act or omission plus prejudicial to good or discipline equals an offense under the military. If you're saying, well, how do we compare that to any other offense? You've got to translate that prejudicial to good order and discipline into something more concrete. Prejudicial to good order and discipline is a very vague and abstract concept. In order to take that offense, that anything, any act or omission plus prejudice, and compare it to something else, I believe that the court doing a social cost analysis is doing nothing more than saying, well, what was the prejudice in this case? Okay, in this case, which is the case that the government cited, in this case, it took away manpower in a hostile fire zone, and that was the prejudice. They had to backfill the guy, and they had to do all that stuff. And they go, okay, now that we've translated prejudice in this case, which is basically just saying, what's the element? Let's compare that to the next one and see if it's the same. So that's where the social cost analysis would come in at all. But really, at the end of the day, the social cost analysis is nothing more than an elements analysis. It's just a way that they're trying to translate the prejudicial to good or indiscipline element in a 134 type of context. So at the end of the day, all we get is just an elements analysis where we're comparing elements to elements.
Counsel, I don't believe your custom of the service argument that you're raising today was raised at the court-martial. So are we looking at that on a plain error standard?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And I don't have the case citation on me, but I can certainly supplementally cite it. This court has certainly come out in the past and said that the trial defense counsel in making an objection doesn't have to specifically lay down for the judge exactly where it's coming from or what the arguments are. It's enough that the defense counsel has brought it to the judge's attention, enough that the judge can correct any error that might be out there.
Well, I think the objection has to do enough to get the judge looking at the right provisions, though.
But then you've got, and I agree, Judge, but then that puts the government in a hard spot, which is fine, that if they want to argue that the judge was using 1003, then he knew about the custom of the service being out there in the first place. He knew the analysis to do. He just did it incorrectly. Okay.
I see your time has expired. Did you reserve time for rebuttal?
I did.
Okay, you can take up the rest of it on rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Government? You may want to respond to the new issue today, and you're certainly welcome to, but if you feel uncomfortable with that, you certainly can ask us to allow you to file some supplemental briefing, so you can decide that amongst yourselves.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Mary Ellen Sheen. Together with Colonel Catherine Oler, we represent the United States in this case. This simply is not an ex post facto case. The military judge correctly determined the maximum punishment in this case using RCM 1003C1B and not the President's executive order. The military judge also correctly determined that appellant's crime of sexual abuse with a child was closely related to the offense of indecent liberties with a child and not closely related to the offense of indecent exposure, thereby making the correct maximum punishment in this case 15 years confinement. I first want to address appellant's argument that the military judge used the executive order in this case to set the maximum punishment. And I would like to direct this court's attention to the Court of Criminal Appeals decision in this case, where they made a finding of fact on the issue. And as this court knows, it accepts the findings of fact of a CCA unless they are clearly erroneous or unless they are unsupported by the record. And so the CCA said in this case, although the military judge noted that the president had set the maximum confinement for the new offenses at 15 years, his discussion with counsel focused on trial defense counsel's argument that the punishment should be determined by comparison to the offense of indecent exposure. The military judge's decision was based on his conclusion that a closely related offense existed, which is a standard under RCM 1003C1BI. And now, again, that particular finding of fact by the CCA was absolutely supported by the record, and therefore this court should accept that as the fact of the case.
Now, the military judge never cited RCM 1003, though.
Yes, that's correct, Judge Olson. He did not, but I think from the context of the record, it's clear that that's what he was doing. He was looking at the offense of indecent liberties, comparing it to indecent exposure. He noted on the record that indecent exposure did not contain an intent element, which indecent liberties with a child did. So I think based on that, their finding of fact was certainly supported by the record.
Didn't he use language at one point referring to the executive order and say that, quote, would be applicable, end quote?
I think at the beginning of his analysis, that's what he may have been thinking. But if you look at the period after they broke and after they came back from lunch, you could definitely see on the record that there was a shift in the tone of the discussion and a shift in sort of what they were talking about. And so for those reasons, again, I think that the finding of fact by AFCA is supported by the
record. Does it matter? I mean, if he got to the right result, does it matter that he may have relied on an executive order that may not have applied?
It doesn't matter, Your Honor, because supposing he did use the executive orders that the maximum punishment, if he in fact determined the correct punishment, then appellant in that case didn't suffer any prejudice at all, and there would be no violation of the ex post facto clause.
Right. So I guess that what I'm concerned about is this new argument that indecent liberties, because it was not a listed offense at the time of the appellant's offense, it's not something that we look to. What, do you have a response to that?
Well, I do believe, Your Honor, I disagree with appellant on this issue. I do believe that indecent liberties with a child, the 2007 version of that rule, was still listed in the manual at that particular time. Appellant.
What particular time are we talking about? What's the
at
relevance?
The time of at the time appellant committed his misconduct. That's ultimately what we're looking.
So you're saying that indecent liberties was a listed offense at the time of the appellant's misconduct.
It was listed. Appellant says that it was repealed.
What does it mean to be listed, I guess?
Well, unfortunately, the manual doesn't do a good job of describing exactly what is meant by this. The Navy Court of Criminal, or Navy Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeals addressed this issue in United States v. Booker, which is cited in the United States brief. And I think that the Navy Court's analysis is very persuasive there. And what the Navy said is, or the Navy Marine Corps Court said, is that the president is absolutely the only person who has the authority to amend the manual. And that's not what happened at this time. He did, he had not issued an executive order at the time appellant committed his misconduct that actually had either added or subtracted they hadn't added the 2012 offenses to the manual and hadn't deleted the 2007. Now, the 2007 versions. Now, appellant wants to say that these laws or the 2007 laws were repealed, but that's not the case. I mean, even now in the military, if we're going to attempt to charge an offense that occurred during that time period between 2007 and 2012, we still use that version of the statute from 2007. It has not been repealed in that sense. And since the president never took the affirmative step for the 2007 version of Article 120, removing it from the manual, it was still listed. That was the conclusion that the Navy Marine Corps Court came to in Booker, and it is persuasive in this particular case, I believe.
What date was the were the offenses repealed for offenses that happened after that date? Do we have that date?
I'm sorry, sir, could you repeat
that? What date was the old 120 repealed?
The old 120 was, well, I don't think it's actually been, again, my argument isn't that it wasn't actually repealed, but would you say, you're saying what date was the new Article 120?
Well, I understand your argument. For offenses that occurred prior to that date still get charged under that offense.
Right, yes.
And I'm just interested in what was the date when the new 120 came in?
When it came into effect was 28 June 2012. So therefore, any offenses that were committed after that particular date would be charged under the 2012 version.
And the offenses here occurred when?
They occurred between February 2013 and May 2013. So they ended essentially right before the president signed the executive order signing the maximum punishments into effect.
So I understand your argument that the offenses have remained, indecent liberties remains a listed offense. It's just that with respect to offenses that occurred after the enactment of the new statute, Article 120, charged under that version of the statute. But that doesn't mean that the indecent liberties offense has been delisted.
Exactly. It hasn't been delisted. It hasn't been repealed, at least for these purposes. At the time of appellant's offenses, it was still listed in the manual.
So under your argument, every offense that has been superseded by new legislation in the UCMJ is still listed somewhere amorphously.
Well, unless the president in an executive order has actually taken an affirmative step to delete it. For example, if we're talking about the pre-2007 version of indecent acts and indecent liberties with a child that was listed under 134, there was actually an executive order. It was 13447, where the president actually said that he was deleting those particular offenses from the manual. And so those, I would say, are no longer listed. And so if we're interested in them, they would only come out under custom of the service. But here we do have offenses that are still listed at the time of appellant's offense in the manual, and then we can look to them under RCM 1003 C1B sub I.
What was the effective date of the 2012 NDAA?
The date of the 2012?
No, the effective date of the legislation is set out. Well, you know, if there's no effective date, then of course it's the date it's signed. But did the statutory amendment, the NDAA, have a separate effective date? And if so, what was it?
It was at 28 June 2012 that the new article.
12 for the FY12. They never pass it until the end of the year. And are you sure that's not 13?
I am sure, Your Honor. I'm sure, Your Honor, that for the 12 offenses that are
was it made retroactively effective in the statute?
I think it may have been the NDAA then from 2011 that actually said.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would have been the 12 NDAA would have been enacted in 11.
Right, it would have been enacted in 11.
Right.
It said that the offense went into, the new Article 120, as we're calling it, new, I guess you could say, went into effect 28 June 2012.
12, okay, now, when did the misconduct occur, the alleged misconduct?
From February through May of 2013.
Right? Okay. Well, then, the statute's been repealed. So how can it serve as a basis for criminal liability?
Well, the basis for criminal liability was the 2012, which was enacted. He was charged with sexual abuse of a child, Your Honor. It's just when we're looking to what the maximum punishment.
Well, no, wait a minute. If the effective date of the amendment was 28 June 2012, and the misconduct occurred in 13, and you're relating back to a 12 statute, don't you have a rather big problem?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The 12 statute was in effect, so sexual abuse of a child was an offense criminalized by Congress through statute.
Well, the President, under Article 36, has a right to promulgate the manual, but it's got to be consistent with the statute. The President can't amend the statute by regulation. If there's no statute, then where's your liability?
There was a statute at this time, Your Honor.
Well, but it was the subsequent statute, right?
The 2012 sexual abuse of a child under Article 120B with which appellant was charged. The only reason that we're looking back at...
Okay. Go ahead. I have another question, however.
Okay.
Okay. If we go to C1, or CB1 or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
B1. Both of these dueling offenses have problems. Indecent exposure draws a broader net. It's not limited to children. But it's also more narrowly drawn in that it seems to be limited to, and we've held in the past, acts performed in the physical proximity of each other. Okay. The Article 120 offense is again, not limited to children, but it's similar to the offense in that it includes the sending of electronic images or the making of electronic images. However, it seems to be limited to the other situation where somebody takes a lewd photo of the victim, not sends a photo of himself to the victim. So you've got problems with both the offenses. They both, neither one of them is really totally applicable. In that case, why don't we just revert to the language in C1 that says when they're equally related, you default to the lesser sentence and go with indecent exposure.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that sexual abuse of a child is much more closely related to indecent liberties with a child.
Yeah, but the language appears to be limited to taking a picture of the child, not sending a picture of yourself to the child. Do you agree with that?
Well, but there's also that intent element. And this is another thing that I dispute that appellant said. Appellant says that there
It seems to me that intent element to indecent exposure is almost, totally redundant. Why would anyone have the mens rea to expose oneself for other reasons than to gratify his lust?
Well, but that certainly is not part of
no,
the statute.
No, go ahead. But tell me why these aren't equally... off.
Yes, Your Honor. And, well, number one, we have the issue where sexual abuse of a child, you have to have a child involved. Indecent exposure,
you don't. Okay.
Now, again, when we're talking about that element, that specific intent element, an appellant was charged with committing a lewd act, and within the definition of lewd act includes that intent to gratify the sexual desires. It simply is not included within indecent exposure. And so if we're looking at the social cost, which this...
No, don't get into social cost. tell me why these aren't basically, here's your paradigm, here's one, here's the other. Tell me why they're not about equally off.
Well, I think you have to look on what the impact on the child is and why. What's the purpose of criminalizing these particular offenses in the first place?
Does the drafter's analysis help you at all with respect to the purpose for amending the statute?
I absolutely think that it does, Your Honor. I think it does because we can see what the intent was of changing the statute and expanding.
And the primary purpose was to encapsulate or capture this new wave of electronic communication with respect to the but the offense essentially remained the same. You're dealing with the intent to gratify sexual desires with a child. Is that right?
Right. The only difference between sexual abuse of the child and the old indecent liberties was this physical presence, the idea of physical presence. And this court in the United States v. Miller, when talking about indecent liberties with a child, found that you don't have a physical presence over the Internet. And so most likely, based on that decision of this court, the rule was then expanded, and the definition, as they said in the drafter's analysis, of lewd act was expanded to include exposures that occurred over communication technology like the Internet, like happened in this case.
And I don't mean to get you off track here, but I neglected to ask an earlier question about this new argument regarding listing and delisting. Is it the government's position that that argument is properly before this court, even though it's not made in the brief, not argued below in the trial court? Or, for that matter, as I understand it, in the CCA?
The government would assert that it is waived and it's not an appropriate consideration. It's not essentially before this court. Right. To follow up a little bit more on this issue of why sexual abuse of a child is more closely related to indecent liberties with a child, I'd like to sort of compare some things. Let's take, for example, the victim in this case, JY. Now, suppose she's 15 years old, maybe she goes on a college tour with an older brother or sister. There are some streakers. Whatever they're doing, it meets the definition of indecent conduct. JY happens to see it. How can we say that the social cost of something like that, or how can we say that the impact or the effect on the child is as great in a situation like that, as opposed to a situation like we had in the facts of this case, where an appellant, or the appellant in this case, was absolutely targeting JY specifically, doing this, as he explained, with an intent to gratify his own and her sexual desires in this case. The chance for harm, or the potentiality for harm, the language that this court has used before in the United States v. Brown, is much, much greater in the second instance, or the instance that we have in this particular case. Furthermore, I'd like to point out that this court in the past has talked about indecent exposure and called it a minor offense or a petty offense. And that certainly is not what we have in this case, where we have a man targeting a 15-year-old child and doing so with the intent to gratify his sexual desire. Simply in this case, the charged offense was not closely related to indecent exposure.
So you're not willing to concede that there's any relationship there as that we do a comparative analysis, or simply indecent exposure is out as a closely related offense? The only closely related offense here is the old Article 134 offense. Is that your position?
It would be indecent liberties with a child, yes.
Right.
Yes, sir. That's the only closely related offense, because I just don't see, when you have an offense like the one charged in this case, how you can say that it's closely related to a minor or a petty offense, as this court has called indecent exposure before. Now, I briefly want to address custom of the service, because, again, if this court were to find that there are no closely related offenses that are listed in the manual, that would be the next prong of this court's analysis. And so, custom of the service, again, the government disagrees with appellant's contention that this is only customarily punishable by indecent exposure. In my brief, I cited a case, United States v. Sanchez, where certain acts, such as indecent exposure, where there's an exposition, was punishable as indecent acts with another. And indeed, in United States v. Miller, when this court found that someone exposing themselves over communication technology to another individual, that that was not legally sufficient to meet indecent acts for another. This court said that a lesser included offense of that was indecent acts with another. And so indecent acts with another has been in the manual since 1951. At least since 1984, indecent acts with another has been specifically listed as a lesser included offense of indecent liberties with the child. And so if you're looking at what custom of the service or what appellant's particular conduct was punishable by custom of the service, certainly indecent acts with another would fit the bill. And, Your Honor, I see that my time is almost up. So if there are no more questions, may I briefly conclude?
And what is the penalty for indecent acts with another?
The penalty has traditionally been 5 years confinement.
Any other questions? Thank you.
May I conclude, Your Honor? Thank you. The military judge correctly determined the maximum punishment in this case for sexual abuse of a child and correctly calculated it to include 15 years confinement. Since this is the same punishment later authorized by the executive order signed by the president, there is no ex post facto violation in this case. The United States asks this honorable court to affirm the findings and sentence below.
Rebuttal.
Counsel, before you get started, let's assume for a moment that, in fact, the argument that you have raised before us today is properly before us, despite the fact you didn't really raise it in your brief. Why isn't the government's argument compelling that, in other instances, the president has affirmatively stated that certain offenses have been repealed, but in this instance did not specifically affirmatively repeal this offense?
Judge, I would say that it's Congress's job to repeal, and Congress did explicitly repeal both indecent liberties with a child and indecent exposure in 2012 when it came out with the National Offense Authorization Act. Now, if the question is more along the lines of their argument that it was still a listed offense, I just go back to the common sense reading of 1003, that if it's not an offense passed by Congress, then it's not an offense for 1003. At that time, there were no such offenses at the time.
Well, what about the argument that a offense can be superseded by a new offense that Congress brings in, but an individual is brought in and the act of the offense occurred during the term when the older offense was in effect? He's charged under the older offense. Under your argument, that's not an offense.
No, Judge, under my argument, when a person has committed something after the fact, then he couldn't be charged with an offense that has been repealed.
But we're making the comparison here. I mean, we're making the comparison back to whether to this earlier offense, and it just seems a little inconsistent to me that if a person can be charged with that, why can't we make a comparison to it?
Because if a person is charged with that, the punishments are listed within those offenses, presumably. 1003 is only talking about offenses and what offenses were existing at the time that it was looked at. I mean, those are completely separate issues, and the fact that somebody can be charged with an offense that was an offense at the time is different from can we take that offense, even though it's not an offense now, and use it as a comparison when 1003 is talking about right now looking at offenses. So going back to what was really said, counsel for the government initially said, well, after lunch, the military judge got back on track. But that's not the case. After lunch, he came back and said, again, expressing his belief that 1003 was not in play in this case, and he says, again, I believe that barring the president setting the cap, the maximum punishment would be life without possibility of parole and a dishonorable discharge. Am I missing something? And yes, he was missing something. It was RCM 1003.
Major Wilson, are you saying that let's assume we disagree with your underlying analysis of 1003 and we get to a result that says that indecent liberties is the proper offense to compare. Are you saying that because the military judge relied on the president's enactment of this executive order to get to that result that we have to send it back and ask him to dot the I's and cross the T's?
Not at all.
So then why are we still talking about that?
Because I believe that, that indecent liberties is not the right place to go in the first place.
Well, that's isn't that what this is about? Either, I mean, if he got it right for the wrong reasons, he still got it right.
Well, let's, I mean, if you hypothetically said that he flipped a coin three times, a nickel, and it came up 15, and he said 15 years, it doesn't matter that it came up with it the wrong way. And I see my time has expired. May I finish briefly?
You can finish your answer.
Thank you, Judge. If he came up with some absolutely arbitrary way to come up with 15 years but happened to get it right, no, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's nothing ex post facto wrong with that. Not at all.
And that's all I'm saying.
Yep, he used 15 years. They say that the appropriate thing was 15 years anyway. Therefore, he didn't increase the harshness by using the 15 years. Our argument is that it was 1 year. Therefore, he increased the harshness 1,500%. And they even concede within their the custom of the service argument that if it's not this, then it's a 5-year max, which is also an ex post facto violation because it increases it by three. So, Judge, if there's no further questions, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you for your arguments. The court will stand in recess for 10 minutes.